It's time to play like a Jet
with your host, Scott Mason.
Play like a Jet. What does that mean?
Here's Donald. Carry it out. Deep ball. Separation. Caught. Robbie Anderson. Goodbye. Touchdown, Jets.
The whole NFL is watching. A fourth and 10. And here they come. Make this catch. It's intercepted by Mosley.
Maybe out there at the top. Bell breaks a tackle. Bell trying to go all the way. Le'Veon Bell, touchdown.
Big return for Crowder. And he's going to go all the way. Touchdown, 85 yards.
Looking downfield, fires this one and intercepted at the 34. Jamal Adams goes down on the ground and takes it away.
Hill hit immediately. He got the handoff.
You know that's
the Q-inator.
Oh, my gosh.
Listen. Thank you.
From the Vivid Seats Studios, use the promo code OVERTIME to get yourself up to $100 off your very first purchase when you download the Vivid Seats mobile app. This is Play Like a Jet. My name is Scott Mason. It's Wednesday, which means it's time for Midweek with Manish, the beat reporter covering the New York Jets for the New York Daily News. Manish, what is going on with this team right now, man?
Well, certainly a forgettable performance on Monday night. You want to look at the big picture here, and for me, the big picture has always been that I have a strong belief that Sam Darnold will be a good player. He will not be back, for the foreseeable future, so it's going to be some tough sledding. But even with Sam Darnold, I think you realistically just have to look at this early portion of the schedule. How many wins did you think the Jets would actually have with Darnold after six games? I thought if they could get away at 2-4, that would be a win. So it was going to be difficult regardless. Clearly now with Luke Falk at quarterback, after Trevor Siemian's injury, it's going to be nearly impossible to come away with a win, I believe, before Darnold returns.
Let's talk QB a little bit. First of all, what are you hearing on Darnold's timetable to return, and what's the plan of quarterback behind Luke Falk?
In terms of when Darnold's going to return, it's an inexact situation, and there's reports from every corner of the football reporting universe about it being a month-long injury, 5 weeks, 6 weeks, 7 weeks. I think all of that is actually true. The window is fairly large. He's not coming back, of course, against the Patriots this weekend. They've got the bye the following week. The most ambitious timetable had always been, would he be healthy enough to return in week five for the road game in Philadelphia? I can't say for certain that he will or he won't, because I don't believe that the Jets know for certain whether Darnold will be back for that game. I think the cautious approach, the smart approach, frankly, would be to wait beyond the Eagles game, and maybe that means the Cowboys the following week, or maybe even means the game against the Patriots in primetime at MetLife Stadium. I just don't think there's a definitive answer. Everyone's searching for an answer. Fans, of course, want to know a declarative answer, and I just think that the truth is that we don't know yet. And when I say we, I mean media, fans, and the team itself.
Tremaine Johnson was benched in the game. It was a healthy scratch. He wasn't injured. There was no disciplinary action. He just was benched because he wasn't good. Afterwards, he was asked about the possibility of a trade, and to his credit, he took the high road and said he wants to be here. But let's be real about this. There's no way the Jets could move him, right?
If the Jets could trade him, they would have already traded him in the offseason. I understand the question. You want to get the player's perspective, but as you just said, the reality is that if he could be traded, the Jets would have moved on from him this offseason with Mike Maccagnan and absolutely when Joe Douglas took over. The contract is not movable, and the Jets are in an interesting spot because, look, his cap hit is $12 million for this season. The way that the contract was structured, 5 years, $72.5 million, but the reality is that it's a 3 year, $45 million deal. That's where the guaranteed money is. If the Jets decided to cut him after 2019, they would have a $12 million dead cap hit. So the thinking all along was that, well, Trumaine Johnson is not going anywhere until after the 2020 season, because then you can cut bait on those last 2 years and have, minimal financial damage in terms of dead money on your cap, even though 2021 is about $8 million, I think. But the reality is that you look at a three-year window. The way that the Jets are looking at this now, just the evidence suggests that they don't trust him. The coaches don't believe in him. Maybe that could change this year. But if it continues down this path, and look, we've got 14 more games to go, so a lot of things can change. But if it continues down this path, I believe the Jets would eat the money and cut him after 2019. And that's a big pill to swallow, having $12 million in debt. Taking up your cap space for a cornerback who's not here. But again, I think we're kind of getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. Can he reverse course? Yes. Is he in the Jets' doghouse, Greg Williams' doghouse, Denard Wilson, the DB's coach doghouse? Yes, he clearly is. There's no other reason why he would essentially be benched. He played four snaps at the end of the game because Nate Harrison got a little bit banged up. But the proof is in the pudding. The team does not believe in him. I don't know if that'll change. He's going to have to obviously prove it in practice. But as of right now, the team does not believe that he is a starting cornerback for them.
One player that the team supposedly believed in a lot going into the season was Leonard Williams, but he has not done a lot to reward their faith so far. Through two games, he has not done much. He's in a contract year. Can't imagine he's helped his cause of getting himself a big contract with the way he started this season.
After two games, yes. I don't think you want to overreact one way or the other, good or bad, for Tremaine Johnson, for Leonard Williams. It's such a small sample size. If we're talking about this, at Halloween, then that's a different story altogether. But yeah, the early returns haven't been particularly good. Leonard Williams had a weird game yesterday. He only had two tackles. He had two quarterback hits, nothing else. The sacks just aren't, they're not coming. But he's been good in so many different other areas, but it hasn't been a particularly good start for him. And again, we could be having a completely different tune if over the next couple games he does really well. So there is a danger in overreacting after two games, again, both ways, good or bad. But clearly he needs to play much better or he will not be getting any kind of long-term deal from the Jets unless it's a really team-friendly deal. And, if I were him, if he's not playing particularly well, I don't know what it would take to sign a long-term deal because the Jets would probably lowball him, of course.
This offensive line, Manish, granted, like you said, small sample size and all of that, but there's only going to be a limited amount of time before they have to start making moves here because there's only so much of this that anybody can take, especially when Darnold comes back, if they want to keep him from getting killed and if they want to stop Le'Veon Bell running into brick walls. And to his credit, despite running into brick walls all night, Le'Veon Bell still managed to put together a pretty good night. And that's why if you had him on your FanDuel fantasy team, at least you got something out of this game. Certainly didn't if you had Jamison Crowder on your team, but that's a whole other story. If you didn't play with FanDuel this week, you should play next week because if you're a brand new user, you get $20 in site credit when you deposit $20 or more. The beauty of it is it's week to week, so that means that one rotten apple can't ruin your team. If a guy gets injured for the year or if he's struggling much more so than you thought he was going to be when you drafted him high, no big deal. You move on to the next week. Sign up now for FanDuel and get $20 in total bonus. Just make your first deposit of $20 or more to get started, and you'll get an extra $5 in site credit every week for 4 weeks. Go to FanDuel.com/DFS Fantasy or download the FanDuel app today. But Manish, getting back to the offensive line, they do have some decent depth behind the starters. Not that those guys are great, but the starters are playing so bad that they may want to mix it up. When do you see them starting to make some potential changes here? And obviously, I'm sure you would agree that at the end of the season, Joe Douglas is going to put a huge priority on fixing this offensive line, and you could potentially see five new starters next year, right?
Well, I don't think you're going to see five new starters. That would be unprecedented. I don't know who would return. Assembly, in theory, could get cut with minimal financial ramifications, but I would be stunned if the Jets had five new starters. That doesn't typically happen in the NFL for a reason, but there's going to be significant turnover. Maybe it's three, maybe it's four. I thought there were so many plays in this game on Monday night that were absolutely absurd. Part of it is just getting beat, and part of it was terrible scheming, terrible coaching choices. Kelvin Beachum clearly could not handle Myles Garrett, And that was abundantly clear throughout the game. Garrett just used his power to bull rush Beecham way too many times. And then when that, when you see that happening as a coach, I do not understand how you don't provide help for your left tackle. That doesn't make any sense to me, especially when you're down to your second quarterback and then ultimately your third quarterback. There were also way too many times when Myles Garrett was unblocked. And I understand the play design. You know, the play design on those instances were get the ball to Le'Veon Bell out of the backfield quick. So, in essence, you're baiting, quote-unquote baiting, Myles Garrett to running at the quarterback, and then you've got Le'Veon Bell leaking free. So the concept, I do understand that, but when you are down to your final quarterback, Luke Falk, the emergency quarterback actually was Le'Veon Bell on Monday night, but when you're down to Luke Falk, I don't know if there's that much wisdom, or any wisdom, I should say, in having that kind of play design. Because there was one play in the fourth quarter in which Garrett absolutely crushed Falk. It was a third down play that ended up being that, you know, a quick pass to Le'Veon Bell, and then he cut across the field, got like 8 yards or something like that. But Falk was just absolutely drilled on that play by Garrett. And what if Falk got hurt? Is it really worth, you know, designing that type of play, giving a free runner to one of the best pass rushers in the NFL? I don't quite understand that. I think that's poor coaching. I don't really know how else I can say that. And it's a poor play design. You know, the offensive line has not been good. And I, you know, we just talked about not overreacting. I'm not sure, though, if this line is going to get much better. The first play of the second half was really a microcosm of the issues that the Jets have up front. On the right side, Olivier Vernon just drove back Brandon Schell into Falk's face. And on the left side, you had Garrett drive back Kelvin Beecham. Both tackles just got, you know, just got blown off the line of scrimmage by the edge rushers. And then ultimately it led to, I think Garrett got credit for the sack on that play. But, you know, that was emblematic of the issues that they have. And then you've got Ryan Khalil. And I think this certainly bears watching over, you know, the next several days and next several weeks. Khalil is the only offensive lineman not to take play all 68 snaps in that game. He only played 50. And then Jonathan Harrison, as you know, who was supposed to be the week one starter, played 18 snaps. So I don't know if that was rust, if that was ineffective play, if that was conditioning. I'm sure we'll get clarity on that in the coming days. But that certainly bears watching, because everyone thought that Khalil was this incredible acquisition that Joe Douglas made, and it might end up being a very good acquisition, but to this point, the early returns on Khalil aren't very good either.
So it's possible you could go into the matchup against the Patriots with Nate Hairston starting at cornerback over Tremaine Johnson, and even Jonathan Harrison starting at center over Ryan Khalil. Not a guarantee, but it looks like it could be a possibility, and if nothing else, if this keeps up, it's trending towards that being what the Jets are going to be looking at as their regular lineup out of the bye, right?
I mean, it's possible. I'm interested in the center. I want to know, you know, and I'll find this out. I want to know how the Jets actually feel about how Khalil has played to this point. Because remember, he came in late, didn't play in the preseason. Maybe it's just residual rust. This is a former Pro Bowl player, or maybe, you know, maybe he's done. I don't know, but I know what I've seen to this point. And again, even though it's a limited sample size, he has not been particularly effective.
Manish, the injuries were piling up. We saw more of them yesterday. What do we know about some of the key players and when they're going to return, namely C.J. Mosley and Quinn Williams?
Well, look, C.J. Mosley has a groin issue, right? As Adam Gase has said repeatedly, I think he's being truthful about this, is that it is very difficult to gauge a timetable for a groin issue, a soft tissue issue, so the hamstrings fall in line in that category as well. I didn't think there was any opportunity. I know that Gase was holding out hope that he would play on Monday night, but that was never realistic. If he is not 100%, he should not play against the Patriots, because a hobbled C.J. Mosley is going to be completely ineffective. If you have a groin issue, you're just going to be a liability. So I think it's a little early to definitively know whether he'll play on Sunday. Quinn Williams actually surprised me a little bit. I thought that he would try to give it a go on Monday, and he didn't. So I think of the two, you probably have a better chance that Williams would be ready for the game against the Patriots. I don't think that Jordan Jenkins is going to play, just based on his body language, the way he was walking around in the locker room after the game, a significant limp. I would be stunned, and I've been stunned before, but I would really be surprised if he was available against the Patriots. You've got the bye week coming up the following week. It probably makes much more sense to have him rest for 2.5 weeks and see if he can give it a go against Dallas. That might not even be possible. Maybe he's out longer. He's getting an MRI. I don't think he's going to play. I really think there's a chance he might not play for a few weeks. But again, I'm not a doctor. But just based on what I saw, based on that type of injury, a calf injury, I can't imagine that he would come back for this game. Trevor Siemian has the ankle injury. Would not surprise me at all if it was a high ankle sprain, just based on what he was grabbing after he got hit by Myles Garrett on that roughing the passer. He's not going to. I would be stunned if he played either against the Patriots. I think you're looking at Luke Falk as your starting quarterback against the Patriots. And if that happens, of course, the Jets are going to have to bring in another quarterback. And what's interesting to me is who would they bring in? If the Jets had not signed Trevor Siemian in the offseason, they would have brought in Brock Osweiler or David Fales. Those are two quarterbacks who Adam Gase is familiar with. They understand his offense. Say what you want about their skill set, but they do understand the scheme. So if Falk is indeed going to be the starting quarterback against the Patriots, I would anticipate that one of those two guys, Fales or Osweiler, would sign this week, just because you don't have a big learning curve in terms of understanding the playbook. So it's not a good situation. I did not want to give Adam Gase a free pass when Trevor Siemian was in, just because Siemian, has a winning record as a starting quarterback and enough starts in his career. This was his 25th, where I thought that the Jets, should be able to play competitive and maybe even squeeze out a win. But this is difficult when you have Luke Falk as your quarterback. It's difficult. That being said, I would like to see a little bit more creativity, some offensive ingenuity, because that's why Adam Gase was hired. He was hired to be a guru. And even before Trevor Siemian got hurt, in the quarter and a half I saw of Trevor Siemian and the Jet offense, he was a lot of dink and dunk. It was a lot of what we saw when Sam Darnold was the quarterback in week one, not stretching the field, just a lot of short stuff and just a lot of things that were disappointing, frankly, because I had high hopes that Adam Gase would really jolt this offense. And maybe he will moving forward. But to this point, regardless of whether it was Darnold, Siemian, or Falk at quarterback, this offense has been stagnant. They've got 11 points in 8 quarters. That's doesn't matter who the quarterback is. That's embarrassing.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
I was complaining about what Gase was doing yesterday with both Siemian and Falk. It seemed like his game plan was more or less to lay down and surrender. And I understand that you're going to be a lot more cautious with Siemian and especially Falk, but the answer can't be to not even try to win the game. So that's something that bears watching over the next couple of weeks. But I do want to ask you about a couple of columns that you wrote, especially the most recent one, where you more or less said that you don't think that expectations should have changed at all with Sam Darnold out and Trevor Siemian in. It sounds like you're at least changing your tune a little bit in that regard now that it's Luke Falk.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing for for a head coach to win with your third quarterback, especially a quarterback who had never been active in his career until Monday night. You've got to be fair to Adam Gase in that respect. Having Trevor Siemian in, a guy who had 24 career starts before Monday night with a winning record, is a lot different than having a second-year quarterback who was active for the first time. You've got to be fair about that. I don't think you can expect miracles. Again, I don't think they were winning any games with Trevor Siemian at quarterback over this first 6-week stretch. I certainly don't believe that they're going to win any games with Luke Falk. I want to see some creativity, however. I want to see some of the reasons why I liked the hire. I was on board when Adam Gase was hired because of what I thought was a really creative, smart offensive mind. But I haven't seen it to this point. That doesn't mean it's not going to happen. That doesn't mean that the Jets are going to go 0-16 or their offense is going to be a dud for the next 3.5 months. But I have to call it like I see it. And from what I had heard from people who had worked with Gase and played for Gase in the past, this was a good move, that this was a guy who could make this offense significantly better. And just because they lost Sam Darnold, in my estimation, doesn't ruin the entire season. That doesn't give Adam Gase a free pass. They're paying him a lot of money because they believed in him. Christopher Johnson called him an innovator, made him seem like the second coming of Bill Walsh, said that he's got a track record of making quarterbacks better and elevating their play. And that's why I felt that when Trevor Siemian became the starting quarterback, the expectations should not change, also because I didn't think they were going to win that many games with Darnold over this six-game stretch. I thought the bulk of their victories would come after that second Patriot game. And that still could be the case, assuming Darnold comes back at some point in that window, or Siemian is healthy. But I think the more realistic scenario is that Darnold will be healthy when the schedule lightens up. So, but while Falk is the quarterback, it's going to be difficult and challenging for Gase, to say the least. But you've got to be creative. You've got to be smarter than what he was yesterday. It puts Gase in a difficult spot because, again, this was his third quarterback. I do agree with the notion of kind of easing him in when he came in. And you saw that with, five or six consecutive touches from Bell. I think four or five runs, and then, a quick pass to Bell. I get that. Gase was in a difficult spot yesterday when Falk came in. I want to see some signs of life. I want to see them stretching the field consistently. The passes at the line of scrimmage or behind the line of scrimmage are fine and good as change-ups, but when they are the staple of your offense, regardless of who the quarterback is, you're not going to win very many games.
No question about that. Adam Gase has to make the offense more creative, even if it's Luke Falk, even if it was Trevor Siemian, regardless of who's back there. You've got to at least try to win games. But I do think that it's weird that it seems like there's this perception that you turned on Adam Gase really, really quickly. So I just wanted to ask you about that, because when Gase was hired, here's what you wrote. He's smart, confident, doesn't put up with any BS. He realizes that a rotten culture will destroy everything. He's got no time for knuckleheads. The Jets hit a home run by hiring Adam Gase to be their next head coach. And then you went on to talk about how innovative he was. And then you wrote this a couple of days ago. There are no free lunches or mulligans when they throw an obscene amount of money at you to direct grown men to run around and score touchdowns 4 months of the year. Sam Darnold's indefinite absence due to mononucleosis shouldn't change our expectations for Adam Gase this season. If he is indeed the quarterback guru that CEO Christopher Johnson billed him to be 8 months ago, it's time to do with some guruing. Now, to be fair, you also did bill him as a guru. Now, you obviously don't own the Jets, but still you're somebody with a highly popular public platform. And on top of this, you have been very, very emphatic, and I agree with you on this, that Sam Darnold has the opportunity to be one of the league's best quarterbacks. So after 1 week last week, this all changed. You went from Adam Gase is this brilliant hire to Adam Gase gets no excuses, even though the guy that I said was going to be the next elite quarterback isn't here anymore. You could see where this would be a little strange to people, right? That it almost seemed like you completely did a 180 after 1 week.
No, I actually completely disagree with that, because both points that you raised in both columns are not mutually exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
They're not, one is not tied to the other, so that I believe that Adam Gase is a smart offensive mind. I still do. I think I just said it 5 minutes ago, mm-hmm. that I still believe that, and I believe that Sam Darnold will be a difference maker in the league for a very long time. I've never said that Sam Darnold in September of 2019 is Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees. He's not at that point right now, but he will get there in my estimation. And I think that Adam Gase is smart enough to help him get there. Just because I believed that Adam Gase was, a smart offensive mind doesn't mean that I should be an apologist for Adam Gase and say that he gets a free pass because his second year quarterback with four career wins is out for, a month or so. So the points that I raised in both columns are not mutually exclusive. You don't need one to be true to have the other be true. They are independent points, and I have consistently believed, and I still believe, as poorly as the Jets have played offensively through eight quarters, that Adam Gase really does understand offense as well. And that's why I am befuddled that he has not stretched the field more often. That's why I'm a little confused why there's so much dink and dunk in the offense, because there's stuff in his playbook that goes beyond 5 yards, that goes beyond 10 yards. I just don't want to take him off the hook because I believe he is a smart guy, offensively speaking. I think that he is a very bright coach in that respect. But I am not going to say that this season doesn't matter now because Sam Darnold isn't playing and that he gets to make his $4 or $5 million in 2019 without any consequence. And the consequence should not be that he gets fired. I have never advocated for any coach to be fired after one season. I don't believe that's true. I don't believe that's a good philosophy for a winning organization. If you start doing that, you become radioactive. You become what the Browns used to be when they had high turnover at the head coaching spot. We'll see what happens moving forward. But you know what I'm talking about. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years ago, they were turning over coaches, every other year. And I don't believe that's a stable way of handling your business. The fact that I thought he was smart and Christopher Johnson thought that he was a smart offensive coach are completely different things, in that I am not paying Adam Gase. I am not the owner of the team. I am not the CEO of the team. The expectations should not be lowered significantly because Trevor Siemian was in at quarterback. I think that's outrageous. I think that's a losing mindset. If you're going to do that, then you should probably start by, having free admission to every game, because why charge your fan base to watch a product that you don't think is going anywhere? That doesn't make sense to me. You have to be competitive. You have to try to win, steal some wins. There are some great coaches in this league who suffer injuries and never complain about it, and you never hear a peep out of them, and they end up going far in the playoffs. Sometimes they win a Super Bowl. The last time I checked, Joe Douglas was part of an organization that won a Super Bowl after their MVP candidate quarterback got hurt with, 4 or 5 games left. They went on a playoff run with their backup quarterback, who had one good season in his career and had really had a forgettable rest of his career. So, the notion that Darnold was out means that the season is over and Adam Gase gets to make excuses is ludicrous. And I believe that, from the moment that I wrote it, I'm never going to change my mind on that, because that's a loser's mindset. Winners overcome. Winning coaches learn to deal with injuries. Bill Belichick has suffered a litany of injuries throughout his coaching career, and the Patriots keep on winning. Even when he lost his star quarterback, they won 10 games, right? So I just think it's a loser's mindset. And I'm not saying that Adam Gase is a loser. What I'm saying is that from an organizational standpoint and a culture standpoint, if you're thrown in the towel, even privately, and saying, hey, it's okay, put your hands up, this season doesn't really matter, we don't have Sam Darnold for a month, that is not a winning attitude, and you'll never become a winner if you think like that.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
I completely agree with you that this should not give Adam Gase a free pass. No question about it. He has got to be judged on what he does here and how he makes the most of what he's got, whether it's Luke Falk, Trevor Siemian, or Sam Darnold. But you wrote in the column more than once that the expectations shouldn't change at all. So you really think that the expectations that fans had going into the season, say 7-9 to 9-7 was the general consensus, that shouldn't change at all because Sam Darnold is going to miss a bunch of games? Luke Falk and Trevor Siemian, it's fair to expect the same number of wins?
I wrote that column with the premise that Trevor Siemian would be the quarterback, not Luke Falk. So, as I said earlier, you do have to give Adam Gase a break here with Luke Falk at the quarterback position. But when I wrote the column, Luke Falk was not the quarterback. It was Trevor Siemian. And again, if you look at this first six-game stretch, they already lost the game with Sam Darnold against the Bills. What do you think their record would have been after six games? They were 0-1 with Sam Darnold. Over the next five games, how many wins do fans actually think they would have won with Sam Darnold at quarterback? One? Two? There's no way you could be objective and say the Jets would have won three of the next five games with Sam, with a healthy Sam Darnold. I mean, that's just looking through, you know, green and white colored glasses. That's drinking the Kool-Aid. If you're being fair and objective about it, if Sam Darnold were healthy after this 0-1 start, because we already have a record of him losing against Buffalo, would Sam Darnold have beaten the Patriots at any point over the next 6 weeks? Would he have won either of those two games? I think an unbiased person would say no. So that puts him at three losses. Would they have won at Philadelphia? I guess if you're a Jet fan, you could say yes. I don't believe so. I think that's a loss. Would they have beaten the Cowboys? Maybe. I don't know. I think the best chance the Jets had with a healthy Sam Darnold over this first six-game stretch was Monday night against Cleveland, because I don't think Cleveland's nearly as good as what people hyped them up to be. I thought they would be really good, but from what I've seen, I don't think they're that good. I think the Jets could have won that game with Sam Darnold, but the Jets were underdogs before we found out Sam Darnold was even sick. Vegas had him as a 2.5-point underdog when we thought Sam Darnold was going to be the quarterback. So perhaps they could have beaten Cleveland. As I said before, and I firmly believe this, if Sam Darnold were the quarterback and never gotten sick, I think the Jets would have started off 2-4 at best.
But you will agree that regardless of whether or not the Jets go 2-4 or 0-6, they would have had a much better chance to win a couple of games early if Sam Darnold hadn't gotten mono rather than going to Trevor Siemian or now Luke Falk. I know that Luke Falk is the curveball here, but you do agree that Sam Darnold certainly would have given them a much better chance to win some of these games than Trevor Siemian would have, right?
I think Sam Darnold's a better player than Trevor Siemian. A much better chance? I don't know. Are we talking... They have a 35% chance without Sam Darnold and a 45% chance or a 40% chance with Sam Darnold. It's such a nebulous thing. I can't tell you what does much better mean. I don't believe that they would have won more than two games over the first six games, regardless of who the quarterback is. That's the clearest way that I can explain it. 2-4 at best, likely 1-5 with Sam Darnold. And then again, the schedule lightens up after that, and that's when I thought the Jets could really, you know, roll together a few wins.
I'll be honest with you, Manish. At this point, I think most Jets fans would very much be thrilled with 1-5.
I don't think that's happening. Unless Darnold comes back, I do not see them winning a game with Luke Falk and or Brock Osweiler and or David Fales as their quarterback over the next month.
I just shivered a little bit thinking about that. It's going to be a rough couple of weeks, but hopefully, as you said, Adam Gase turns out to be the guy that you thought he was and that Christopher Johnson thought he was, and maybe he can do something with Luke Falk and the Jets can surprise some people over the next couple of weeks.
I just want to see some creativity, some competitive, productive offensive football from Gase. And again, I think if you look close at games with, you know, from play to play, if you look at a play design and you understand a play design and say, hey, this makes a lot of sense, it didn't work because the quarterback's not good enough, then it's hard to fault Adam Gase. But when you are designing plays that are opening the door for your lesser players to get killed, that to me is a coaching flaw. And hopefully Adam Gase gets that corrected. He's going to have to obviously change a lot of things in his playbook to cater to Luke Falk's strengths or to cater to whoever is under center, because Sam Darnold covered up for a lot of mistakes because of his immobility. Clearly Siemian didn't have that mobility. Now we'll see with Luke Falk. But again, be competitive, be productive, be disciplined. The Jets were none of that on Monday night.
No question about it, and they are going to have to change that if they want any chance to win one of the games over the next couple of weeks. Manish Mehta of the New York Daily News, thanks so much for coming on as always. Really glad that we got an opportunity to talk about that column that you wrote because a ton of people have been buzzing about it. I'm sure you've got plenty brewing right now that is going to spin Jets Twitter and basically all Jets fans on their heads over the next couple of days because you have a way of doing that, Manish, and that is why you're one of the most well-read people on the Jets beat and why people keep going back and checking out your stuff. What do you have coming down the pike over at the Daily News right now?
Well, I'm going to be critical of the Patriots. So I guess Jets fans will like that, but I don't agree with how they've handled the Antonio Brown situation. It's a fluid situation, so maybe maybe Antonio Brown won't even be playing on Sunday. Who knows? But I have a lot of respect for winners, and you can't take away the fact that the Patriots are winners, and they figure out ways to win. But just taking on Antonio Brown and keeping Antonio Brown after a lot of the stuff that's come to light over the last week or so is disgraceful, to be honest with you.
Go ahead and read Manish this week in the Daily News. Sounds like if you're a Jets fan looking for some anti-Patriots material, Manish is going to give it to you this week. So sometimes Manish is the heel, sometimes he's the baby face. Manish, it sounds like you're going to be the baby face this week. So go ahead and read that in the Daily News when it comes out. Don't forget that we've got a ton of other great shows coming up here on Play Like a Jet the rest of the week leading up to the Patriots matchup at Foxborough. We'll have Prepare for Takeoff tomorrow with Paulie Brazaise. Paulie has Mark Schofield, the host of Locked On Patriots, as his guest to dissect how things are going to look from the Patriots side of the ledger coming up this Sunday. Spoiler alert, Patriot fans are pretty confident for a reason. We'll have There's Always Next Year with Brian Bassett, Travis Milton, and Josh Conrad coming up. Normally that's on Tuesdays, but because of the way that this week worked out, it's going to be later in the week this week instead, and it'll move back to Tuesday next week. Then we've got the weekend, and of course that means the pregame report with the very big deal Chris Nimbley, as well as the game day morning mailbag, and we will throw in some weather from Ed Valley, some gambling advice from my brother Craig, who had a decent week this week. And we will go over all the injuries, including what I'm sure we're going to find out about Trevor Siemian, with our medical expert, Dr. Steven Stoller, 35-year orthopedic surgeon. If you haven't already, please go ahead and leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. It doesn't take you much time. It doesn't cost you any money, but it really helps out a lot. So if you could go ahead and do that for us, we really appreciate it. And for the latest and greatest in New York Jets podcasts, you know where to go. That's Turn on the Jets Digital and turnonthejets.com.